Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Earlier this month, Bridgeport City Councilwoman Michelle Lyons of the 134th District called on the Bridgeport Catholic Diocese to build additional elderly housing on its property on Jewett Avenue in the north end of Bridgeport. And I thought, you know what? Let's talk about this story, the importance of it, the significance of it. So I want to welcome to the show this morning both Bridgeport City Councilwoman Michelle Lyons as well as retired Judge Carmen Lopez. Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
So let's, first of all, Councilwoman, let's talk about this. Where did this call of action come from? Like, talk to us about what led up to this.
Well, the Catholic Church had proposed putting a Bellarmine College over on 91 Jewett Avenue. And that's where it all came about. And we the neighbors found out about it. And, you know, that wasn't something that they really wanted to have in the area based upon we already have a couple of colleges, you know, already located in the city of Bridgeport. They already have a community college, Housatonic, plus we already have Sacred Heart University. It may not be located in Bridgeport, but it's in Fairfield, which they're very active in Bridgeport. So
yeah,
at
absolutely.
This time, we felt it wasn't good.
So tell us, if you don't mind, from your professional, you know, standpoint, the need for elderly housing.
Well, the need for elderly housing is also based upon over here on Jewett Avenue. They have a senior home over here. And I hear the request all the time, oh, I wish we had more elderly housing. I wish we had more elderly housing. Because right now, they're 3 years behind for someone even getting into Jewett Avenue. So the need for this is extremely important. And especially in today's world, we have the seniors do not have many places to go when they have, you know, their houses are being sold, or they have to be removed from their homes, or they have to leave their homes. And they need this. They need elderly housing so they have a place to reside when situations like this occur.
Tell us, if you don't mind, Michelle, would this be kind of like venturing out into something brand new for the diocese? Is that why maybe they didn't think this was the route they were going to go initially?
I don't know, because I haven't had a conversation with them regarding this, and that was one of the things that was very important to the neighbors, because they really wanted to have a conversation with Bishop Gagliardi. You know, so he would know what our intentions were, what our desires are. I mean, we don't own the property, so all we could do as neighbors and as a councilwoman is to give our heartfelt feelings of what we would like to have in our neighborhood, and which would be great for the community. I think it would be great for them and for the Catholic Church, because it would help the Catholic Church be more community active with us. So we would all do something together. And I think that would be a great idea.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michelle, and don't worry, Carmen, I'm going to come to you in 1 minute. Correct me if I'm wrong, though, but haven't they built other elderly housing projects in Fairfield County? I thought they have.
That I'm not really aware of, to be honest with you. I'm not aware of that. I just know for this neighborhood here and the community here, since we already have senior housing, which is just that it's not senior housing. It's just a senior area that's right next door to the Catholic Church there. And there, like I said, it's already filled mm-hmm. with for a 3-year waiting over there and in that location. And that is not owned by the Catholic Diocese. That's owned by a place, a contractor or a representation from New York. So that's the only thing that I know as of right now. And I went to go visit them. I went to go speak with them. But they said they would be interested in elderly housing next door as well.
So we're talking about this very hyperlocal story that matters to people in Bridgeport. City Councilwoman Michelle Lyons of the 134th District called on the Bridgeport Catholic Diocese recently to build additional elderly housing on one of its properties in the north end of Bridgeport. And my understanding is former Superior Court Judge Carmen Lopez has been offering legal advice concerning the zoning to you, Michelle. So, Carmen, here's where you come into play. What can you tell us sort of about this project, your thoughts on it, and what have you been saying about it to Michelle?
Well, it's a situation where, in fact, the diocese has engaged in constructing senior housing. In fact, that parcel of land where the diocesan center is right now, it was subdivided many years ago, and they built, I'm not sure how many apartments are in, but there is a senior housing building adjacent to it. They ran it for many years, and then they sold it to this corporation or to this entity that is now running the senior housing. I think when I looked at this situation, I think the first thing that struck me was how unfair it was, that this is a wonderful neighborhood of people. Michelle Lyons is an exceptional councilwoman, always wanting to do the right thing for her neighborhood. And they didn't find out about this until the matter was already pending in the zoning offices of Bridgeport. And there was a plan to build what they called the Bellarmine College, which was essentially, as we understood it, a two-year college for minority students. They made sure they emphasized that it was for underprivileged, but basically minority students, and that they would run two programs, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, and that it was not a residential. Now, I think that it was important, and I talked about it with these people up here in the North End who are wonderful people. They've already been invaded by Sacred Heart University, mm-hmm. another Catholic institution that promised at the beginning to not be a residential. And they've been taken over, their homes, these buildings. So they approach this, and they're wary, and I don't blame them. And
yeah,
so they said, geez, couldn't you at least have spoken to us? Mm-hmm. And we all know what the mission of the Catholic Church is. So I understood that their actions were not necessarily very neighborly. So we had no choice. They went ahead with their plans. They asked me to help. I reviewed the zoning regulations, and it was clear that building a college as opposed to a high school was not allowed by the zone. And then the way Bridgeport is, which most people from Bridgeport know, the city attorney's office issued an opinion saying it was allowed. We did our research, we appealed his decision, and then they issued the correct decision. So it wasn't allowed. So there's a lot of, like, static. We're now asking for the bishop and his counsel, who is instrumental in this, that's Attorney Ann McCrory, to accept having a meeting with the neighbors. But we've already been advised that that is not what the church would like to do. They just want to meet one-on-one with our city council person. And she's a representative. And she loves her constituents, and we support her request to meet with the community. But so far, that has not been accepted.
This morning, we're talking to Bridgeport City Councilwoman Michelle Lyons, as well as retired Judge Carmen Lopez. And this is a very hyper-local story, but it's impacting many residents in Bridgeport. So recently, Councilwoman Lyons was calling on the Bridgeport Catholic Diocese to build additional elderly housing on one of its properties in the north end of Bridgeport. And there's some controversy because, there's always proposals of let's expand the college. And, you know, something to just go off of what you were saying, Judge Lopez, I had a caller not that long ago, maybe a few months ago, who was living, oh my gosh, she said she lived in this property for easily, I want to say like 20 years she had lived there. And she said she was older. She was probably in her upper 60s, low 70s, but she had lived there for a very long time, and it was affordable housing. And Sacred Heart basically came in and was like, "Hey, yeah, we're bulldozing this building down, so you got to go." Like within weeks, and at that time it was very peak
still kind of coming off of COVID, where everything has been so expensive, it's very hard to find anywhere that's even affordable, let alone options, because housing is so scarce right now. And my heart broke for this woman. You know, like I talked to the governor about it. I talked to Mayor Ganim about it. And essentially, it got bulldozed. And she, I don't know where she ended up. I actually have no idea. So when you talk about the fact that things are just getting knocked down and put up and expanded and things like that, I believe it. I don't know both sides of it. I have not heard from Sacred Heart directly or the Bridgeport Diocese. It's very hard to get them on the air, but I believe it. I've heard it from my own listeners that affordable housing, especially if you are older and being able to stay in the city where you're not being disrupted by the college town like aura that's around there, it's very challenging. So at this point, it sounds like the diocese does not want to talk to neighbors. At least that's according to you, Carmen. That's what it sounds like. So what can
we
listeners
have some
do?
Letters in response? I mean, okay. Michelle has written letters asking to meet, especially after this. You know, it was so difficult dealing with all of this and the anger. And the attorney that the bishop hired, there was never any discussions with the neighbors. In fact, we had a meeting. We're very thankful to the pastor at North Park Baptist Church because he lets us use his facilities for neighborhood meetings, very well attended. And it was for the neighbors. And I wrote to the attorney for the bishop, and I said, no, this is just for the neighbors. And they sent someone. And afterwards I said, how could you send someone? We asked you not to. It was just for the neighbors. They said, well, how else would we know what you're doing? So if I find, I mean, I was brought up a Catholic. I went to Sacred Heart University. I graduated with a business degree from there. And I'm just stunned by the fact that the mission of the church, as they like to say, just look at their website, is about caring and loving and making everything nice and following the commandments of Jesus, because it's a Catholic, it's a Christian church. And yet, look what we are dealing with. So it's a sadness at two levels. It's the disappointment of the violations of the missions of an entity like the church. And then number two, just the reality that these neighbors, I know my parents lived up in the North End. The parties they have. They wake up in the morning and there's beer cans all over the place. So they have not been good neighbors. And we're afraid that if you do put another institution like that in the center, it's 5 acres of undeveloped land. And so the neighbors care about what's going to go there. The neighbors care. And it would be very nice if we could meet in at least some semblance of love and respect about how that area is going to be developed. So that woman that you talked about. And Melissa, it seems to me that the reason why it broke your heart is because you have one and you care. And there are many people who care. But there are many people who hold positions of power, and they use their power to strengthen themselves, and they forget about we the people. And that's what I think is going on here. So I hope that that's why I thank you so much that you have Michelle on today, and you've allowed me to say these words, because maybe they will listen, and maybe this will be the impetus for having a discussion with the neighbors about moving forward.
Well, besides having you guys on the air, which it's no problem, you don't have to thank me. I think it's a really important hyperlocal story, and I think it impacts a lot of people, which is exactly why this show has been created. What can my listeners do? If I have some Bridgeport residents listening right now, or I just have people who care, they're like, listen, I live in Stamford, but this story really upset me. This bothers me. This reality bothers me. I wasn't aware of it. Like, can they also write letters? And if so, who are they sending it to?
I think that they should, you know, send letters to the Diocese of Bridgeport, to the bishop, as well as to me as the city councilwoman for the area. And you can CC copy to also Judge Lopez, Carmen Lopez, as well. And I think that that would be very helpful, saying that, listen, we agree that we need elderly housing in the area, because also, too, there's set aside for we wanted for veterans and people with disabilities as well. Like an area within there. And another proposal that we talked about too, that is if the diocese, you know, we have the elderly housing with the set aside for the veterans and the disabilities, that they can maintain an office there as well. So, I mean, there were so many options that thank God for Carmen Lopez, attorney, and judge that she has helped, because without her, you know, helping me out in this area, it's, you know, she's been a tremendous help. And also who's helped with this was also was Chris Caruso at the time. You know, he had attended the meetings as well. So it's very important that we get letters, you know, supporting our actions and saying, yes, we need elderly housing in Bridgeport. We need this in the neighborhood. We need this, you know, in the North End. We need this even throughout the city of Bridgeport. But we have a place for it. Please hear our cries. Hear what the people of this community are saying. And I think having those letters being sent and to, for our support would be greatly appreciated.
Oh, I agree with Michelle. I think writing letters, and like I said, the bishop and his attorney, who, as I understand, makes many of the decisions regarding the next steps of the diocese. And so, I mean, a couple times we were threatened that if we didn't want this college here, they would build very condensed buildings and there would be no parking. And we can read in between the lines. So we'd like to put that aside. We'd ask everyone to write letters to the bishop to tell him that. There is no question that there is no housing. I mean, even in public housing for the elderly, I think there's a tremendous wait. So Michelle is absolutely right. We can alleviate that problem. We can create opportunities for the youth in the neighborhood to help the elderly that are mm-hmm. there. There's all kinds of things that we can do that could promote love and community. So.
Well, I thank you both for coming on and for presenting this story, and I will certainly put this up on our podcast so that this can also be shared on social media if you want to be able to use that. So I thank you both for coming on this morning, and good luck in the future.
Yeah, and thank you so much, really.
Thank you very, very much. Oh, this is very much appreciated, and I will let all the neighbors know that we were on WICC and what you did for us. So thank you again.
You don't have to thank me. I appreciate you guys coming on. Thank you again. That is Bridgeport City Councilwoman Michelle Lyons, as well as retired Judge Carmen Lopez here this morning on WICC. I'm honestly shocked that I've never had her on my show before, because I've known Laura Devlin for quite some time. Grew up in Fairfield. I run into her at so many different events. She's been on other WICC shows. She's been on Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli. She's been on with Lisa Wexler. And for the first time, I have her on my show, which I'm very shocked about. Laura Devlin, welcome to the show, the Republican candidate running for lieutenant governor here in Connecticut. How are you?
Great, Melissa. I'm so happy to be with you this morning. I can't believe this is the first time.
It's kind of weird, right? I'm a little mad at myself. I'm surprised it's taken me this long to get you on, but I'm very excited to have you here. And I'm so glad that you're here to take our questions this morning. You ready?
Me too. Absolutely.
So we have some listener questions for you. And I will say, a lot of times if people are not really super familiar with candidates on the show, a lot of them could feel like they're kind of elementary questions. But I think they're great to have if people are just meeting you here. I'm Melissa in the Morning for the first time.
Sure.
So first and foremost, let's just talk about you for a second. Could you tell us just like your involvement with Connecticut politics and what you would like to bring to the lieutenant governor job if you're elected?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have had the privilege of serving the people of Fairfield and Trumbull in the 134th district in the House for the past 8 years. And I have to say, I've always kind of considered myself a citizen legislator, because never in my wildest dreams or aspirations that I think I would be involved in government at any level. I had a corporate job, spent over 20 years in the corporate world, and was a commuter to New York City. And, you know, one day was, and like most people, right, you're busy. You're busy with your life. I'm raising kids. I'm commuting. I've got a, you know, executive job. There's a lot going on. So, but one day I'm like, why are my property taxes almost tripling? And to be honest, you know, I'm originally from Chicago, although I've lived here for over 30 years. I didn't really understand our local form of government. I came from mayors and town councils. We had first selectmen and RTMs. So I got involved locally and served on our RTM and on our Board of Assessment Appeals, and then was elected to the legislature in an open seat, and just felt that the fiscal mismanagement at the state level, perhaps I could make a difference. And I think I've earned a reputation of someone who you know, always stands up for the people that I represent. I am not afraid to take on difficult issues, and I'm always straight. And, you know, will always tell the truth to the people that I represent as well. So I'm excited about the prospects of serving as lieutenant governor with Bob. I was looking for, you know, an action-oriented partner that will listen to the people of our state. So
in 8 years of serving in the role that you have, Laura, what would you say are some of the biggest successes you feel like, some of the proudest moments politically that you've taken away?
So, you know, probably the biggest thing, besides there's many day-to-day things that you do as a legislator to help your constituents that are pretty much under the radar, but probably the biggest thing that I did, and honestly, I quit my paid job in order to do it, and that was to fight Governor Lamont's effort to make Connecticut the most highly densely tolled state in the entire nation. And I knew as the ranking member on the Transportation Committee, along with my partner from the Senate, Senator Henry Martin from Bristol, with this being the governor's priority and us being, you know, in the minority, if we did business the same old way, that would just fly through the legislature. And we decided we had to take the message out to the people. And we held over 20 toll forums, informational forums, to give a background on transportation spending, what the governor's proposal and plan was, what it would mean, and what an alternative would be, with the goal of, if we give you the information, the straight scoop, you go tell your legislators what you think is the best thing to do. And as a result, you know, we don't have tolls today, and not because I don't think we need to invest in our infrastructure, but, you know, we already pay money that other states that do have tolls, we already have in added taxes that they don't have. So that's probably one thing that I am most proud of, and you know, aligns with my commitment to make Connecticut more affordable for the people and the businesses who are here.
Laura Devlin is here. She's the Republican candidate running for lieutenant governor here in Connecticut. And tell me just really quick, Laura. So I know that you were kind of saying in the beginning of this, like, never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd be here. You know, what was that like? Because I meant to have you on when the announcement came through from Bob Stefanowski that he was going to ask you to be his running mate. I mean, what was sort of that like? Like, do you and Bob have a history of working together or something? Like, why? I'm not saying why you in a demeaning way, but I'm saying, you know, what was that sort of like? Did you see that coming?
So honestly, I did not anticipate being selected as his lieutenant governor. I certainly said I would be open to any conversations. And I was really honored that he called me. In fact, I had already filed my paperwork to run in the 134th House seat again. And when he asked, I did not hesitate to say yes, because I firmly believe he is the right guy to lead our state. And we are a really good team that complements each other very well. Like, he is a, you know, pragmatic businessman, manager that isn't a go in and blow it up kind of guy, but is, you know, very thoughtful and thorough. I bring the legislative experience and background, and also have, you know, a business background as well. So we really complement each other really well, and I couldn't be, you know, more proud that he did ask me, and couldn't be more excited that he would be our next governor.
So correct me if I'm wrong, Laura. Can people vote, though? Like, if and I'm not saying that they should go one way or another, but, like, do people in Connecticut have the option of separating a lieutenant governor and a governor's, like, a candidacy? So, like, if somebody really liked lieutenant, you know, loved Governor Lamont, but wasn't a big fan of Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewitz, like, could they pair you two together? Could they technically vote?
We are a single ticket.
Okay.
In Connecticut. So
you're in
both
tandem.
For governor and lieutenant governor in a single ticket.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Because I was about to ask a follow-up question to that, but there you go. So you're in tandem. So when you're going the Stefanowski-Devlin route, that's it. That's the way you're going. I gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
Very cool. No, I wanted to know because I think some states do separate them, and I've gotten that
they
question
do.
Before. Okay. That's what I, all right. I thought Connecticut was in tandem, but I wasn't sure. You never know.
Good morning. We're talking to Laura Devlin this morning. She is the Republican candidate running for lieutenant governor here in Connecticut. And it's exciting to have Laura on this morning. And, of course, we are taking your public questions and comments if you want to call in, 203-333-9422. I know we are getting a call in right now, Laura. But before we get to that, a quick question. So the current lieutenant governor, Susan Bicewicz, she's, I would say, I mean, I'm not, this isn't official, but I would say her claim to fame is basically supporting minority in women-owned businesses. I think that's been her big thing that she's been supportive of. So do you agree with her approach from the state that we really need to focus on these businesses? Or do you think that there's more support that could just be going to business owners in general if they don't fall under the category of women-owned or minority-owned businesses?
So I do believe that it is important to support opportunities for minority and women-owned businesses. But to really have a strong and healthy economy, we need to support and empower all small business owners and job creators to invest and grow in our state. So there are things that we can do and need to do to make Connecticut more affordable for small businesses and to also foster a healthy business climate. So I'm excited to be able to do that.
Do you believe there are things that the lieutenant governor has done in her 4 years that has poorly impacted Connecticut?
Well, you know, she certainly has been a cheerleader for state policy that has made it more expensive to live and to do business here. And it's also weakened our criminal justice system. So she certainly supported all of the policies that, you know, Governor Lamont has pushed forward.
So let's go to the phones. We've got Bob in Newtown who is holding on the line this morning. And Bob, I thank you so much for the call. You are talking to Laura Devlin, who is the Republican candidate running for lieutenant governor here in Connecticut. What was either your question or comment?
First of all, good luck, Laura. I usually lean towards Republicans. I actually voted for Stefanowski the last time. I think it's too bad that you're being grouped in with him this time. I wanted to know if you knew anything about any illegal interest charging for a company that he was involved with, and they ended up getting sued by a woman in Canada. Do you know anything about that?
So I think it's in reference to your running mate, Bob Stefanowski, I believe is what Bob's asking about.
So what I know about Bob is he is a man of high integrity and believes in transparency in government and working for the people. So I don't know anything about that and would be surprised.
Yeah. And again, I think and thank you for the question, Bob, in Newtown. I want to remind folks that I think when I was talking to Bob very quickly in the commercial break, I wasn't sure what he was going to ask. But I think that was in regards to the split ticket, the idea of could you vote, you know, like for a Republican lieutenant governor or a Democratic, you know, and a Democratic governor, you cannot. Here in Connecticut, it's a full Republican ticket or a Democratic ticket. And Laura Devlin, lieutenant governor candidate, running with Bob Stefanowski. Another question I have actually from a listener is actually, you know, there have been some very controversial topics that have come up during the Lamont administration years. And I'm not even talking about the hot button topics like abortion and everything else that we've heard about in recent months. We're talking like zoning issues, child vaccinations, excess money not going back to taxpayers, legal weed, you know, wrong way drivers, just some of the things that we're seeing in recent years. Law enforcement, that's another one. What do you think about, you know, these things? Like, how would you want to improve upon any of them, any which one of them, whichever ones kind of pull at your heartstrings?
So there's a lot of ways to improve those items that you've just listed off. And let's just start with zoning. You know, what I hear and what we see, and it's not just in Fairfield County, but the overreach of this state to remove home rule, to really take a one-size-fits-all approach for zoning is not the right way to go with Connecticut. What we're seeing in a lot of our communities, and we certainly see it here in Fairfield, are the impacts of a flawed law known as 830G. And what that enables developers to do is to really just go in virtually anywhere and essentially put up almost anything that they would like. And I guess, you know, in the example of in Fairfield, If you have seen, and I don't know how you could miss, the five-story black and gray brick building that was put up near the train station.
Yes.
Has gotten, and the threat of another huge development that will dwarf the community theater. These projects have finally gotten the attention of people across the town, across the state, and from all political spectrums. I really think that that is a law that needs to be reformed. Affordable housing is something that is important and we need to address, but I think there is a real detriment and to what I believe is an economic development asset for our state is a lot of the colonial charm and history. You know, growing up in Illinois, we didn't have that. Mm. And it really is a treasure of our state. And, you know, it is bypassed quite a bit. So I think that there definitely needs to be reforms. I think we have got to focus on local control and whether that is zoning, whether that is education, whether that is, you know, get the government out between parents and their kids. That is absolutely something that I would, and I know Bob would also advocate for and make improvements to.
All right, we're going to go to one more question. We're getting a call in from John in Hamden. John, thank you so much. Welcome to Melissa in the Morning. You're chatting with Laura Devlin, Republican candidate for Lieutenant Governor. What's your question?
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate that. Yeah, Lieutenant Governor candidate, Lauren, I appreciate your time. I have a quick
thank
comment.
You.
You know, it's nice that we talk about all these things that are going on in some of the affordable housing and the zoning things. Quite frankly, people, if you poll them, and I'm sure you guys have, they're more interested in the economics of what's going on. The affordability, if you live in Fairfield County, if you live in other counties as well, where the prices are going, where everything is happening. That's what people want to hear. These ancillary topics, which are very important, are not priorities in today's market. You know, the economy is tough. The stock market is down. People are losing jobs. Restaurants are having a difficult time along with other businesses. That's what we want to hear. So it's nice that we champion these other causes, and we can't forget them. But that shouldn't be in the forefront of what we're talking about, especially if it's a lieutenant governor or a governor. You should be talking about the things that are priorities. I know that Democrats and Republicans spend a lot of money on soliciting information and finding out what the real topics, the hot topics are out there. So let's talk about them. If we're going to have some dialogue, and I'm a listener, and I vote Republican and Democrat, I vote for the candidate, let's have dialogue about what's important. I haven't heard any conversation about that. Thank you, Melissa.
No problem.
John, God bless you.
Yeah, thank you, John, for calling.
Spot on. He is spot on. Number one issue across our state, and I have been answering your questions, but above all, is absolutely the affordability of, and lack of affordability within our state. And Bob and I would take immediate action in order to make changes. For example, we can lower the income tax rate for a middle class and working families by a percentage point, which is significant. We can get the sales tax under 6%. We can get rid of Governor Lamont's extra tax on food. We can get rid of Governor Lamont's highway use tax that's going to go into effect on January 1st and further increase the cost of goods in our state. We can cut red tape, eliminate nuisance business fees. There are so many things we can do. There's about, out of the over 300 taxes that we collect in Connecticut, and I have to tell you, Governor Sununu from New Hampshire was down here not long ago, and he's like, oh, my God. He goes, you guys in Connecticut have taxes we've never heard of.
But yeah, and they haven't.
I
know from living in Vermont. I know Governor Sununu only because I've interviewed him plenty of times. Yeah, there are some things down here that it's like they had never even heard of in northern New England. It's pretty astonishing, actually.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line is, you know, enough of the gimmicks. Let's provide real, sustainable relief to the people of Connecticut.
So I think that answers John's question, but I think it also, you know, opens up the conversation that maybe we need to do more diving into really like he was saying, the things that actually impact us on a daily basis, like these. I will say, though, I do think things like zoning, things like child vaccinations, it does impact a lot of people in Connecticut. But I think we can all agree on, you know, no matter how much money you do or don't make, you want to know that it's affordable to live here. So I appreciate you tackling that, Laura Devlin. And I think it would be really great to continue talking about that on the show. So I will. I will schedule with I'll have my people call your people, schedule to come back on and talk about it. I think it's really important. And Laura, I really appreciate you coming on. So glad I finally got you on the show.
Oh, Melissa, thank you. It's been a real treat, and I do look forward to continuing to talk with you and your listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for the opportunity.
No problem. Thank you for your time. Laura Devlin here on WICC.
What's happening in Washington and how it affects you? Melissa in the Morning welcomes Congressman Jim Himes to WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Good morning, Congressman Himes. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm doing great. It's Friday. How can it not be great?
Oh, I know. I hear you. So it's interesting, Congressman Himes. I tell my audience all the time, listen, this is really, I just get up early to kind of ask the questions from my listeners to the people that they want to reach. And last week, you and I were talking a little bit more about, you know, like the environmental climate change initiatives that are coming out of the Inflation Reduction Act. And I don't know, I got off the air that day, got this very lengthy email from a woman who I know listens to the show. And I thought there were really interesting questions. And she said, you know, could you maybe talk to Congressman Himes about this? So I'm kind of throwing this out from left field. And if you're like, hey, this is so not my realm, I can't talk about it, we'll move on. But she wanted to talk a little bit about electric vehicles. What do you think?
Yeah. No, that's totally fair, and boy, it better be my realm, right? Since I voted on the bill exactly.
I was
a week
thinking
ago.
I wouldn't throw you that badly. I was like, I think he could probably talk about it, but you know, trying to be.
So let's start with because what happened last Friday was the biggest effort, the biggest investment the United States has ever made in addressing the effects of climate change. And there's a lot there. We could talk about, there are tax incentives for people who are going to take out the 50-year-old windows in their home and put in, much more modern, much more efficient windows. But, a lot of the tax incentives will provide help to Americans to buy electric vehicles, and I'm happy to say, Melissa, that tax credit is a lot smarter than it used to be. And what I mean by that was, you know, if 5 years ago, really Tesla, which let's face it, is a luxury car, was the most popular electrical vehicle, and you know, not a lot of people are in a position to buy Teslas. The legislation that we passed a week ago is going to put income limits. So, you know, if you make more than about $150,000 a year, the government's not going to help you buy an electrical vehicle. And the requirements are that the vehicles ultimately have a substantial amount of U.S. Input. So the batteries, today most batteries are made abroad in China, and that's obviously a real risk since, you know, batteries are becoming increasingly important. They're in everything we have, from our phones to our cars, you name it. Over time, that credit is going to go to cars that are made in the United States and therefore create U.S. jobs, that have equipment inside of them that are made in the United States. And I think it's going to be a pretty targeted tax credit. It's not just going to be, you know, wealthy people buying Teslas. It's going to be people buying lower price point electric vehicles. And that's obviously a good thing for the environment, good thing for our air quality. So that's a big part of the bill.
So let's talk, when it comes to electric vehicles, you started to touch on it, which was the batteries. Two big concerns. One came from this listener. The other one, though, I'll say from a news standpoint. But this listener said, as you just mentioned, Congressman, China has or owns most of the mineral rights to make these batteries. And once they're depleted, they sit in landfills. And of course, that can just emit more toxic waste. So I think the question that this listener is asking about is, you know, even in just regards to the batteries, is it really as environmentally friendly as we're putting out there?
Yeah, no, and those are good questions. And you know, we need to remember that electric vehicles are still a pretty new technology. I mean, there's, I don't know how many, but there's probably, a dozen of them, ranging from the Tesla to the Chevy Volt to a bunch of other brands. There are a bunch out there, but it's still a developing technology. Shame on us. Over time, not only, and by the way, this isn't just true for things like lithium and batteries that are made largely in China. It's true for another big piece of legislation, the semiconductors, the chips that by the way, go into
right.
electric cars and refrigerators and your iPhone and your watch and you name it. We've realized COVID, and we don't need to go too far down this particular path because it's not what you asked, but we realized when shipping was stopped by COVID that too much really critical stuff is made abroad. And therefore, when you have a disruption to those supply chains, really bad things happen, including inflation and the inability to do things like actually buy cars, right? Back to the electric vehicles, it is still a new technology, and we've got work to do to address some of these points. Yes. The batteries, we have work to do to make them fully recyclable. I'm a big optimist on American technology. I mean, if you look at the first gasoline-powered automobile, you know, it was not nearly what they are today. Let's just put it that way. So I'm pretty sure that over time, we will evolve much more efficient, much longer range electric vehicles. We haven't even talked about that, right? You know, we're getting there, but I think the electric vehicles still have a range of, maximum range between 250 and 300 miles. There's still not enough charging stations around the state. So you've got a lot of hurdles to overcome for broad adoption. But again, remember what that means. You know, if you're sitting in traffic on the Merritt or 95, as too many people do too much, you're breathing the garbage that comes out of the tailpipes of gasoline-burning automobiles. And so, your listener is not wrong to ask those questions, but I'm a big believer that over time they will get well solved.
We're talking to Congressman Jim Himes this morning, and we're continuing to just chat about, saving the environment and things that we could be doing. And, of course, this comes off the heels of the Inflation Reduction Act. Just put them together, the Induction Act. And that was signed, obviously, late last week. And we had a listener who said, I want to specifically talk about electric vehicles. Continuing on with batteries, Congressman Himes, I know in our news in recent weeks, there have been a couple, one especially, horrific electric vehicle fires because those batteries firefighters essentially are like, listen, unless we get, insane amounts of gallons of water on property, not to mention we're in a drought, but that's a totally separate thing. We basically let them burn out, essentially. We let things get completely destroyed, like an electric bus in the New Haven County area just was completely destroyed. And now the fleet has been taken off because they want to make sure that this battery thing doesn't become a huge issue. And so that's something else that I'm wondering, and I don't know if that's something, you can't really comment on, but like to me, I think that's a huge concern that we're willing to go, hey, we just have no real way of extinguishing these things. So just get out of your car as soon as you see it starting to flame up. Like that's a huge concern. I don't know. I just wonder about that. Like if we're coming up with something different, but I don't know if we can. I'm not sure if there's an answer for that.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, thank God these aren't pervasive things. I mean, yes, there was one bus. And you may remember when Teslas were brand new, I'm thinking sort of, 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
They had an issue too with batteries. If they do catch fire, you've got a real problem. Two things to say about that, though. One, anytime you've got concentrated energy in a gasoline-burning car, you've got, 16 gallons of gasoline in your gas tank. Guess what? That's a fire hazard, too. All of us have had the experience of driving by a car on fire on 95. So anytime you've got concentrated energy, whether it's 16 gallons of gasoline or an electric battery, you've got potential for a lot of energy, which could drive fires. And yes, both are hard to fight. Grease fires in your kitchen, don't throw water on them, right? Again, it's a technological challenge. Fortunately, it's not, overwhelming. As technology evolves, firefighters are going to need to have, instead of having just hoses with water, they're going to need to have foam, gasoline fires, airport fires, that kind of thing, where there's a lot of fuel around are put out not with water but with foam. So there will be adjustments needed to be made, but almost all people understand that over time, and over time is really important, Melissa, because it can't happen overnight.
Right.
Over time, we're going to need to evolve our country towards cleaner energy sources. You know, I mean, Europe is on fire right now. The Colorado River barely has water in it. You know, we're seeing crazy weather patterns, 110 degrees in London. It goes on and on and on. So over time, we're going to need to make the adjustment. And the reason I'm really ultimately excited about this bill, Melissa, is the United States has always been a technological leader. You know, everything from, you know, nuclear weaponry and nuclear plants to iPhones to you name it, the personal computer, we grew those things here in the United States. And, you know, the evolution away from, gasoline and coal burning and gas burning economies, which has to be done right, no question about it. It's going to be a lot of new technology, a lot of new jobs. And I'm just so tired of seeing, you know, battery technology getting made in China and stuff. I want that right here in the United States, you know, employing people in our communities.
Well, Congressman Himes, I really appreciate you continuing the conversation this morning with us and talking about things like climate change and specifically this morning, electric vehicles. So I thank you for that.
Great, great. Well, thanks very much, Melissa. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you. You too. That's Congressman Jim Himes here on WICC.